This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Her name was Chrysanthemum Pearl, which is a strange name, I'll admit, if you compare it to the names of her siblings. Well, maybe not Wally, but Norval, Wickersham, Miggles, Boo Boo, and Thnud. She was an unusual girl, Chrysanthemum Pearl. She could create oyster stew out of chocolate mousse, even at the young age of 89 months going on 90. Give her a needle and thread, and she could outsew even the most talented seamstress. Her father would write of her often in Christmas cards and boast of her frequently at dinner parties. And why shouldn't he? He'd created her. I guess most parents create their children, but this case is a little different. Because when I say he created Chrysanthemum Pearl, what I mean is he made her up. He made up Norval and Wally and Wickersham and Miggles and yes, even Boo Boo and Thnud. I guess that's what you do when you're a man like him. What else would you expect but fantastical stories of oyster stew from chocolate mousse made by an imaginary girl named Chrysanthemum Pearl when at a dinner party with Dr. Seuss?
Oh, here we go.
Welcome back to Respect the Dead, the podcast where we don't.
Sweaty. It's no surprise that everybody celebrated your demise and now worms are eating your eyes. So don't you worry your rotten head as you sleep in your sodden bed. It's time to respect the dead.
He's insane.
He is insane. I'm so excited to hear about this this horny, awful man.
Making up an imaginary daughter is like by far the weirdest fucking thing that someone could do.
That is very weird. But now the oyster soup out of chocolate mousse makes sense. You know, I had a storybook when I was growing up called Chrysanthemum, and it was about a little mouse named Chrysanthemum. And the mean mouse at school, like the mean girl mouse, us basically, was like making fun of her name. And then their ballet teacher was like, I'm about to have a little girl. I think I'm going to name her Chrysanthemum. And then the mean ballet girl was nice to her. She was like, oh my God, that's such a good name.
Okay, I love that she's a name shamer. It's very on brand. It's very in for 2024.
Mm-hmm. We love shaming names on this podcast.
Well, it's hilarious.
I would not shame the name Chrysanthemum. Chrysanthemum is a cute name.
No.
I love
somebody
it.
Named like Harry Todd. Or like yeah. Something like that. Like something fucking disgusting then obviously. Robert.
Kevin.
Oh, God. So we're talking today about a Theodore Seuss Geisel, born in 1904, experienced a lot of prejudice early on in his life, which is why it's a shame he decided to go on and do that to other people later, which is something that happens a lot on this podcast.
Yeah, it really does. Like, it's a real bummer. It's one of the worst things about this podcast.
Yeah. It's like, we've really learned a lesson from this. And the lesson is, it's only fun when you do it to somebody else. As a child of two Jewish German parents, there is a lot of hate hurled his way, as well as his sisters. Mm. His childhood was like, boring. I don't want to talk about it. We're going to hop into his little life, his cute little life, when he is at Dartmouth in 1925. Which I'm glad that I Googled because I was doing my research and I'm like, Dartmouth is a stupid name for a school.
Dartmouth.
Whoever named this is stupid. And then I looked up the pronunciation and I was like, they can't have fancy people going there and calling it Dartmouth. And no, that was just me.
Once again, we're finding that people growing up in the shadow of World War II and going to an Ivy League college turns them evil.
Yeah.
Like,
I think
something about like growing up during a world war is really fucked up. Also, education, higher education, yeah. Incredibly fucked up.
Two things that'll rot your brain out of your skull.
And your soul.
Mm-hmm. Her too. Your soul, it'll rot right in your head. So he was a frat bro, Sigma Phi Epsilon. That's cute. And was caught doing some alky with 10 other guys in his room, which was like no chill because possession and consumption was illegal because it was prohibition times.
That sucked. So I know. Boring.
Imagine going to college when alcohol is literally illegal. Ugh. I mean, they seem like they were fine, but like.
First of all, imagine going to college. Second of all, imagine going to college sober. Absolutely the fuck not.
I would blow off a dart in my mouth if I had to do that. The prohibition laws were in place from 1920 to 1933. And he didn't just have like one teensy little infraction. Like he was thirsty, you know? He was a growing boy.
He was in college.
Yeah. What are you supposed to do there but drink?
Like
even back then, I would assume.
But drink.
Yeah. This led to the dean of Dartmouth, Dean Craven Laycock,
to kick oh my god, I love sentence. To do that. It's my favorite.
Craven Laycock is fucking amazing.
The Dean feeling Craven when you're laying cock.
In like a very craven way. Dean Craven Laycock kicked him off the Dartmouth Jack-O-Lantern, which was like a 1920s cracked magazine, basically. In order to keep writing for the Lantern, which I'm calling it because I'm not going to say the Dartmouth Jack-O-Lantern over and over because I'm not a loser. In order for him to continue to write, because he was kicked off, he had to write under a pseudonym, and he chose Seuss. Encouraged by Professor
Wait,
of
wasn't
Rhetoric.
That part of his name? Wasn't that like one of his last names? So yeah. He was like, no one will ever figure me out.
Yeah.
I'm going to write
He's really good at this. Which was encouraged by one of his professors, who was one of his bigger inspirations for writing while he was there.
Well, that's cute.
We love a little
inspirational
dead
teacher.
Poets moment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pouring one out for the teachers in the audience. If you're a teacher, pull out your bottle and have a drink, even if you're at school.
His pen name is regularly pronounced Seuss, which is an anglicized version of his German name, but it's more like Seuss.
Seuss.
It was originally Seuss, which is like, I don't know that I love it. One of his coworkers, Alexander Lang from the Jack-O-Lantern, wrote, "You're wrong as the deuce and shouldn't rejoice if you're calling him Seuss if he pronounces it Seuss." That was like a little rhyme
jail.
That he made up. I
know. Straight to jail.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The writers at that school must have been bottom of the barrel if these are the people that are working on the fucking... Well, I guess the real writers didn't want to work at the Jack-O-Lantern. Just the ones that loved stupid little rhymes.
Imagine like going to a college party sober with these guys.
Like, unless we're doing like a run a train situation, I'm not going. I'm not there.
I think
I'm
they
not
put
dark
like
in that doorway.
I think they put like cocaine and toothpaste back then, so maybe we'd be okay.
Just us sitting there in the corner on the couch with our tube of toothpaste, like. Eventually, he decided to just go with Seuss because that's what everybody was calling him. And, quote, he said it evoked a figure advantageous for an author of children's books to be associated with Mother Goose. So, like,
right. Goose.
Seuss and Goose.
They rhyme.
I guess. He loves rhymes.
He sure does.
He had a doctor because that's what his father always wanted him to be, which is like a little sad, a little daddy's boy.
I'm assuming
make
that he never
name straight Conrad. That's what my dad wanted me to be.
I'm assuming that he didn't stay in college long enough to get his PhD.
No.
So that then it's stolen valor.
Yeah. And I'm joking. My father wanted me to be a union rep.
Oh my God. That's so based.
I know.
You could still do that.
No, I'm busy. No, I'm sorry. I'm really busy making content, which my dad also loves. He like calls me like once a month to be like, I'm so proud of you. They, them, son. So Susie graduates from Dartmouth. Dartmouth. Then goes,
it sounds like
to
a fish.
I know. It's giving Bass Pro Shop. I almost said Bass Pro. I should not be a podcaster.
It's okay. You're out of practice. You never read.
That's true. I also don't have glasses on. So he goes to Lincoln College, which he intended to leave with a doctor of philosophy in English literature, but he didn't because he met a lady, Helen Palmer, who was like, drop that shit. Like, why be an English teacher when you make such bomb ass drawings? Like,
I love a supportive woman. Yeah.
Yeah. She said, Ted's notebooks were always filled with these fabulous animals. So I set to work diverting him. Here was a man who could draw such pictures. He should be earning a living doing that. She was right and she cashed the fuck in.
Yeah. So good for her. She knew.
She was such a wife guy.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. So in 1927, he leaves without a doctorate and goes back to the States, where like right away he was sending out drawings and writings to agencies, magazines, publishers. He asked Life magazine to publish a series of cartoons called Eminent Europeans, but the magazine was like, no, that's okay. That's weird. We don't want that. The first cartoon he did get published was in the July 16th issue, 1927, of the Saturday Evening Post. And getting like one in was enough for him to be like, oh, I can do this. Oh, so I can do this? Then I'm going to do this. And I love that. That's such a cute little moment in an artist's life when they're like, oh, wait, this thing that I love to do might be the thing I get to do. Like, really good feeling. Support him for that. Nothing later, but this, yes. So they're like, fuck you, Springfield, you dumpy little fuck. And they moved to New York, New York, where I guess you need to be a cartoonist.
Where the artists live. The big city.
Let's be real. You're a cartoonist.
You're just mailing them in anyway.
Yeah. I don't think you need to be hobnobbing, but whatever. So within a year, he's hired as a writer and illustrator at the humor magazine Judge. And once he finally has like a regular gig, he proposes to Miss Palmer. Because before he was like, I don't wanna ask her to marry me and then just be this failed artist for the entire time, like a miserable failure of a man. And I'm like, well, spoilers.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, he's on this podcast for a cute little reason. The first cartoon was published on October 22nd, and they are married before the end of November.
Damn.
6 months after he locked that shit down.
Yeah. He was like, now you're going to have that cartoon money, honey.
It's like literally cartoon money. Like he draws it in his office. 6 months after he starts, the first work signed Dr. Seuss was published. That's like his official one, not for the Lantern. I do love a pen name, though.
Like, yeah.
It's
I love a nom de plume.
For straight people. One of the 1928 cartoons in Judge mentioned Flit, a bug spray made by Standard Oil. So about racism, his art style as a cartoonist is very cartoony. He draws people with extreme caricatures, or he draws people as extreme caricatures.
I mean, this
and
is a minstrel
all of
character.
The ones for people of color are like specifically leaning into every racist trope you could possibly find. Like,
these are minstrel
there's no
characters.
Excuse for it. Yeah, 100%. There's no excuse for it. He later said, like, probably shouldn't have done that. And didn't want those more racist works included in some of the things that were published. But it happened at the time. And there's a lot of people who like collect these. the same way people collect, of course, like,
yeah,
those gollywogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like little like mammy dolls and stuff. Like people like love little, that kind of shit. Little Black like Sambo.
Little racist Royal Dalton collection or whatever.
Yeah. Like it's like Precious Moments, but for racist people from the South.
Yeah.
Like very fucked up. It's very fucked up even if you just have Precious Moments, because those things are ugly. But then to also have something ugly and racist.
I honestly think even collecting things is fucked up. You're not Ariel. Yeah. Grow up.
What are like, you? Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was talking to a fucking mockingjay. Those are the ones that collect shit, right? A little mockingbird picking up all your shiny things.
I think a mockingjay is very specifically from The Hunger Games.
Oh, I've never read those books. I just assumed it was a real bird.
You basically have. In pretty much all of his ads, the racism was like, it wasn't a feature. It was just like a little treat he added in. Like, yeah. None of that was necessary. He at no point needed to draw these racist caricatures, right, or even like, I don't want to be like, representation doesn't matter. But like, if you can't draw a person of color without being fucking racist about it, then draw don't your ugly it. White people in your cartoon.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it seems like he just liked the aesthetic of racism.
Yeah.
He was like, ooh, minstrel shows. So cute. So nostalgic. I remember those from back when I used to watch them.
Yesterday. By 1936, he's cashing in. He's famous. The flit ads were like big for him. This little racist, I feel like saying racist endeavor is a weird phrase.
It's his racist little, brand. People were like,
racist,
you know,
branding.
I didn't feel like I had any brand loyalty to a mosquito repellent until I saw these racist caricatures, and I don't know, I just fell in love. I'm a flit guy now.
It's like people who buy beer that says like there are only two genders on it or whatever.
Wait, is that real?
No, but there's that coffee brand that was like,
oh, that's right. It was like, we're made for Republicans.
Yeah, the dark roast light skin blend or whatever the fuck. Yeah. Like, which apparently they recently rebranded because they were like, oh, Republicans don't buy expensive coffee. They buy like garbage Folgers.
Yeah.
So by 1936, Seuss had traveled to 30 countries, no kids, no office hours, tons of cash. So living
the
dream.
That's great.
Here.
What a life.
Right? Like living, laughing, lounging, luxurying.
And he was taking his wife, right?
Yeah.
That's so nice. Being married to a famous racist cartoonist and getting to travel the world.
Yeah. Racistly, I would imagine. What countries did you go to?
I imagine she's also a racist, so it was great. And you know, it was the Netherlands, Scandinavia, Germany. not anywhere further south than France.
And this was back when. So like bank accounts were like literally just bags of money at the bank with your name in it. So that bag must have been so heavy. I'm assuming they have like a dollar sign and then like a name on it. Like,
yeah.
Because of his success and his popularity, they're now friends with the highfaluters. They're hanging out with bankers, hobnobbing with the bourgeoisies.
This is such a weird way to get famous.
I know. Shitty racist cartoons for mosquito repellent.
For mosquito repellent? And suddenly you're hanging out with, like, courtiers?
It'd be like showing up at a party and be like, oh, my God, who's that? It's like, I think that's the girl who came up with, maybe she's born with it, maybe it's Maybelline. And everyone's like, oh, my God.
Wait, but
God.
That actually is impressive.
And probably a little less racist.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know her, but. So they're hanging out with these people. They're taking ad work, like, for more oil products because Flit was like, I'm pretty sure, just like oil-based propane in a can or something.
I mean, that'll keep them away.
He's doing ads for like boat fuel and motor oil, and then for Ford, NBC Radio, for Big Sugar. Like he's getting in.
He's in the money.
His first children book came out in 1931, and it was called Boners, which is just a great name.
Did that mean something else?
I have no idea. So Boners brutally topped the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list. And this led to the concept. Brutally.
Just brutally slayed the competition. Just topped it. Brutally. Just fucked the competition.
That boner brutally topped it. And this led to the conception of the competition. Sequel. More boners.
More boners. Just when you thought you had enough.
Now there's more. It's like, well, okay. I'm back
no,
on board.
I'm full up.
If I don't have enough holes, I'll make more.
Oh, more boners, but I'm already filled to the brim.
The book's sales and favorable reviews encouraged Seuss, and he wrote and illustrated an ABC book with very strange animals, but it didn't grab attention from publishers. I guess they weren't ready for his like nasty little mutants yet.
Right. His who's or whatever.
Yeah. Ugh. On his way home from Europe with What's Her Nuts, he was like listening to the rhythm of the ship's engines, and it inspired a poem that would become his first children's book. That's like a storybook and not just like a bunch of jokes. It was called "And to Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street." That's
okay.
Quaint, I guess.
Sounds cute. Yeah.
Based on his retellings, it was rejected by either 20 or 43 publishers, depending on who he told the story to.
Publishing industry.
I like to tell stories. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was a storyteller. Sometimes you got to stretch the truth to make it interesting, you know?
So homeboy decides he's going to create like some constant characters for his comics, things that he can like pull back and like use again and again when he's doing like editorials or whatever. One of them was the Chinaman.
Oh.
Which we can just, I don't need to put that on screen.
I know what it looks like. I know what it looks like.
I can picture it so clearly and I hate it.
Yeah.
And this is something he refused to change until 1978. Like flat out
Jesus
was just like,
Christ.
No. Mm. So when people are like, it was the time. No.
No.
Still no. So he's over the book, the one that he sent out to 20 to 48 people. He's walking home to burn the manuscript and say like, fuck this shit one day. When he bumped into an old Dartmouth peer who happened to have the power to get it published, and he did. So like, yay connections, I guess.
Yay that guy. Yeah. Yay nepotism.
which is actually the sponsor of today's video.
Oh,
nepotism.
God, I wish. I could really use some nepotism right now.
Yeah. Instead, let's just go to an ad. So he runs into his old friend and is like, okay, I have this thing. Nobody wants it. And he was like, perfect, I'll take it. One of the conditions, though, for him to sign on with Random House Publishing was that he insisted it be in his actual contract that they would publish one of his erotic adult books that he had been working on for a while. It was called The Seven Lady Godivas. Dr. Seuss writing adult sexual books is sick.
I think
he's
a sick man. I think I've seen an image or two from one of them. And yeah, it is just like naked ladies, but still drawn in Dr. Seuss's style.
Yeah.
Which is like weird.
So fucking disturbing.
Different if he used like a different art style. It was like less cartoonish.
Yeah, but he's like, so I draw two things, books for children and books for perverts. It's like, well, they also look exactly the same. So like, I don't love any of this. It feels like a weird little crossover.
So it seems like all of your books are for perverts, but some of them are for children.
Like they're also
That's
for children.
That's how this works out. This is how this shakes out.
So, people, they agreed with us. They're actually like, not here for Dr. Seuss's weird, unsexy cartoons about like dumpy who-looking freaks. Only 2,500 of the original 10,000 printed copies were sold.
Good.
Which is like, can you imagine somebody trusting you enough to print 10,000 books and you sell a quarter of them? Like,
and they're horny books. Like that is like rubbing salt into a wound.
Oh, yeah.
Then you just have a whole bunch of like pictures of naked bean-faced ladies.
Just like all over the house,
just
too.
Like sitting everywhere. Yeah. Just piles of them.
Dr. Seuss explained the failure, attributing it to the fact that he, quote, attempted to draw the sexiest babes I could.
Nope.
But they came out looking absurd.
Yes.
I'm like, that's true. Okay. They all look like olive oil.
Yeah, why doesn't he know how to draw a jawline or a chin?
The like, fact that that's none a good of them start. Have chins is like, like that made-up animal that he drew is like more realistic than these women.
No, okay, none of them have butt cracks either.
Oh no, that's
where
sick.
Do they poop from?
Their mouths.
No.
Just like,
sealed up on one end. Like that dog. South Park episode.
The dog that like comes out of the water and is like,
oh my goodness, you all right?
That's exactly what I'm picturing right here.
It's hideous.
Reissued by multitudinous demand is written on the reissue of it, but that's only because he was already famous and people wanted to be like, haha, look at this gross, horny book that this sick old man drew.
All of them have awful hair too. Like every single one of these seven Lady Godivas.
I just want to go through there with some really sharp scissors and some dry shampoo. Like,
yes. Other than being naked. Okay. The whole reason Lady Godiva was naked is because she had great hair. She was using hair to like cover her bits. Not these girls.
Not these girls.
At least draw one with good hair. He couldn't.
Yeah,
he couldn't
it's
do
really
it.
Rude. No. What a failure.
Fucking sick.
Yeah. I hope he dies.
Oh, wait.
He wrote
I just
four
remembered
more
what
books.
Podcast we're on.
He wrote four more books before World War II began, and he felt called to pivot to political cartoons, of which Seuss would draw over 402 years for the New York City paper, The PM. His drawings, which were later published in a book called Dr. Seuss Goes to War. Just like such, that title is hard as fuck.
It's like Donald Duck Goes to War.
Some of these cartoons, he's like, mocking Hitler or Mussolini, like a little based, but he also criticized people who didn't want the U.S. to get involved in the war, like Charles Lindbergh. So
that's okay. We can criticize Charles Lindbergh.
Yeah, I'm actually fine with like cartoonists criticizing anyone. Like,
and of all of the wars,
criticizing
to like,
is fine.
Of all the wars to be like you. You should want to get into this war. I would say that's the one.
That's the one.
Yeah. Like Charles Lindbergh didn't want to go to World War II because he was a Nazi.
That's always a bad thing to be like on this podcast. We do like outright say not into Nazis. So many of these cartoons, as we know, deeply fucking racist.
Mm-hmm.
One named Signal from Home depicted racist caricatures of Japanese Americans being handed explosives in anticipation of a signal from home.
Mm.
This is fucking sick. The premise of it is Japan is getting people to come to America to secretly be like sleeper agents.
So this is in support of, it specifically says California, and it has a bunch mm-hmm. of buck-toothed, almond-eyed Asian people coming into California and Oregon. So this is like clearly in support of like internment camps.
Mm-hmm.
They're handing out TNT to them because he's arguing that every single one of them is a possible sleeper agent.
Yep.
Yeah.
So even though it's propaganda, it's, well, I'm going to get into it. I'm going to give him like a real, I'm going to give a real quote where he explains his thinking on this. So even though it's propaganda, is also targeting like the Nazis and other perceived enemies of the state that are actual enemies that should be targeted, he reserved his most virulent vitriol for Japanese people. And like you just said, was an ardent and outspoken spokesperson for internment camps. Here's a quote. "But right now, when the slur for Japanese people that I'm not saying mm-hmm. are planting their hatchets in our skulls, it seems like a hell of a time for us to smile and warble, 'Brothers!' It is a rather flabby battle cry. If we want to win, we've got to kill slur for Japanese people. Whether it depresses John Haynes Holmes or not, we can get palsy wowsy afterward with those that are left."
Those that are left.
Palsy wowsy, as in not murdering. There's two genders. There's palsy wowsy mm-hmm. and I kill you.
Also, like, I, as you can probably guess from this political cartoon, the people getting dragged off to internment camps were not just Japanese Americans. It was every Asian American because they weren't bothering to fucking check, were they?
Well, they were all slur for Japanese people.
Yeah. My grandma a few years ago was talking about like how like sad it was like when her friends in the town that they grew up in got dragged off to internment camps. And I don't think that town had a Japanese population to speak of. It used to have a Chinese population at one point.
Mm-hmm. It's legitimately fucking sick. And to have somebody support it is monstrous, but to be a public figure who fucking does children's
outspoken
work.
Outspoken about it.
Who to be like an outspoken supporter, to convince people that otherwise may be on the fence that this is the moral thing to do, and that to do anything else would be stupid and could lead to their deaths. Like, it's pure fucking like straight up xenophobic propaganda. The kind mm-hmm. of stuff you still hear today, like the way he's held up. Like, I was so mad when I was doing my research. I like cried twice because I was like, this is pure and unadulterated vitriol. Like, it's like mm-hmm. so toxic. It is poison. Even like having those thoughts in your mind is like toxic to your ability to have empathy for other people, to find any sort of like solidarity or community. Like, it's so fucking disgusting.
He refers to them as slurs. Yeah. He refers to them as slurs, and he draws them with slit eyes and bug teeth. Like, this is like beyond racist.
Yeah, this this is like people on 4chan might be like, like that.
Dial it back.
Seems a little unfair. Yeah, dial it back. Like, we're like, people are gonna like, you're supposed to at least attempt to like hide this under like white supremacist talking points about like save the slur.
Yeah.
Like keep the like caravan mask, thing that you've got going on. Yeah. Pull up your mask, baby. It's slipping. So many of his books shared similar racist caricatures. If I Ran the Zoo has two men from Africa wearing grass skirts without shirts or shoes. He frequently used demeaning depictions of Black people in his editorial cartoons, and these depictions were often used to support arguments. One of his most damaging cartoons was a picture of a man from Japan standing next to Hitler. On March 5th, 1942, it was published in the newspaper PM. It read, "What have you done today to help save your country from them?" I don't, that's the first time I cried when reading this, because that is like, what can you possibly say about that ever? You can never make that up. You can never take that back. You can never change. Like, this got circulated around. Like, it's not even like it was just something he was saying.
Yeah.
Like, this was like his content that he was putting out. He was a racist influencer.
And I want to say, like, circling back to like his political cartoons being in high school textbooks, when I was in high school, at least, it was not these ones. It was the ones that were like, and even Dr. Seuss got in on the pro-liberation.
I'm not surprised. I was about to be like, I can't believe they would let a racist in an American textbook. I was like, okay, wait, Kaylin, you know this one?
Yeah.
That's, I mean, who, like, wrote them.
And I mean, again, like, it is morally justified to go to war against the Nazis. It is morally justified to go to war against the Japanese Empire. But that doesn't justify racism against... like, and against like your fellow Americans.
Yeah. Against civilians as well. Like, yeah. there's always this idea when it comes to like the xenophobic othering of, these people are against you. Every single one of them is against you. They were taught.
Yeah.
Like from birth to hate you and the American way of life. And it's like, no, that's you, babe.
Yeah.
Like, you're the one who's reading this shit in your newspapers every day. You're the one who looks at an army and sees like all of its people and is able to justify striking back against innocent civilians for the actions of a government that they do not control. Yeah. And they'll, like, in the same breath, they'll be like, that's a fucking dictatorship and the civilians are to blame. It's like, well, how's that work?
Yeah. Total war is like never, ever justifiable in my mind. And yeah, it's fucking disgusting.
So I have a quote from Professor of Children's and Young Adult Literature, Ebony Thomas, because I wasn't going to have this discussion without getting some input from someone who actually studies literature and isn't an old-ass white man. Quote, "In Dr. Seuss's books, we have a kind of sensibility which is oriented towards centering the white child and decentering everyone else. Dr. Seuss was shaped by a completely immersive white supremacist culture. Even during that time, our ancestors and elders were protesting racist works and producing alternative stories for our children. How do we decide what endures and what doesn't endure? It's our responsibility to decide what kind of books to put in front of our kids." End quote. Which I think is a point that I touched on this briefly earlier, but like, even for the time, people were like, that's fucked up. Maybe not the majority of white people, but that doesn't matter. Like,
yeah. There's so many children's books artists. Like, there's so many children's books. You don't need to. Yeah, it's also ugly.
Yeah, that's the other thing about his books. I can tell you right now, my friends and I would have killed that cat with hammers if he came into our home. Started juggling my fish or whatever the fuck. I don't think so, you goddamn rat. A 2019 examination of Sousa's works revealed that just 2% of human characters were people of color.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing a single one.
Well, good.
They've all been blonde.
Yeah, I don't want him to draw them. I do not want him drawing a person of color. Like, I think that ship has sailed. I think we're done being like, well, mm-hmm. maybe could you draw them less racist? Like, no. Mm-hmm. Why don't you stay the fuck away?
Get black people's faces out of your pen.
get black people's faces out of your mouth. The study found that depictions and mentions of black characters were heavily influenced by stereotypes against black people and depictions of white supremacy. Despite the blatant racism, many of his books express his views on a wide variety of social and political issues that he, heavy air quotes, leans left on. The Lorax, 1971, about environmentalism and anti-consumerism. Mm-hmm. The Sneetches, about racial equality, which, like, The Butter Battle Book, about the arms race.
I remember that.
Yertle the Turtle, about Hitler and anti-authoritarianism. The Grinch, criticizing the economic materialism and consumerism of the Christmas season. And Horton Hears a Who, about anti-isolationism and internationalism. So, like, a lot of his books did have a message that I don't think are necessarily harmful. But I also don't think you need to get it from him.
Yeah.
I think you can teach about commercialism and how capitalism is bad without The Grinch Stole Christmas.
Every single Christmas movie is about how commercialism is bad.
Like,
every
literally
single one.
Spin the fucking wheel, bitch. Like,
this sucks because I do really like the Jim Carrey Grinch.
Me too. He was said to have rescinded his animosity towards Japanese people after the war.
Oh.
Thank you.
I'm done with that now.
I'm actually over it. I'm in my beef squashed era.
Yeah.
Like, fucking die.
We're cool now, right? Fuck off.
So Horton Hears a Who was an allegory for the American post-war occupation of Japan. And he dedicated the book to his Japanese friend.
Oh, he has the one. He has the token.
Yeah. It's like Fred Phelps, like right before he dies, mm-hmm. like dedicating like God Hates Fags to, I don't know, who's gay? Elton John? Like,
honestly?
Iconic.
Yeah.
Dedicating God Hates Fags to Elton John would legitimately be fucking based.
And Elton John would think so too.
Oh, 100%. Okay. Maybe I do need to write a book called God Hates Fags. And then the entire book is just dedication to everyone. Dedication to everyone that I think is gay. Just like, oh, just 300
That's
pages.
So mean.
And some just of them like are like wildly off base too. Just like random people. Like Tommy B from grade 2. Like, definitely gay.
God hates you. God hates you, Tommy B.
Tommy D, you're cool though. So the company that's continuing on his legacy, Dr. Seuss Enterprises, announced on March 2nd, 2021, that it would stop publishing and licensing 6 of Seuss's works, including And to Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street If I Ran the Zoo, and a few other ones. They're all here, but I don't care. The most important thing is that they went woke.
Oh.
They went disgustingly woke.
Seuss
and they
woke.
Stole, they broke in to every single conservative person's home and snatched these books that they never owned right out of their children's crying hands.
Mm-hmm. I heard about that. I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember when Matt Walsh was so mad that he didn't have 7 Lady Godivas. He was like, my kids deserve to be masturbating over that book.
So they said, ceasing sales of these books is only part of our commitment and our broader plan to ensure Dr. Seuss Enterprises catalog represents and supports all communities and families. Which, like, shut up. Just like 2021.
Yeah. They waited. Printing more.
Yeah. They waited until there was like hundreds of thousands in circulation. Yeah.
Which is a thing that like happens like with non-controversial books too. If they just don't sell very well,
yeah,
they'll like stop printing them.
Stop printing them.
Clearly what they did. But then they're like,
yeah, this was about sales 100%.
Yeah. But they're like, we just want to make an announcement that we're doing a woke right now.
Yeah. And all the people that wanted these books for like cute little racist purposes, they want like first editions. They don't want like something from Barnes and Noble. Like you want like the classic racism.
Your racism needs to be collectible.
Yeah. If you're a racist collector, like
you want it to appreciate in value.
Yeah. So the publisher admitted that the books portray people in ways that are hurtful and wrong and just flat out renounce them, which, of course, right-wing fans of racism attempted to punish the corporation for their speech. Yeah. Lots of YouTube videos, podcasts, tweets. I've never taken any of this seriously because they're mad about something else, like, every other day. And
they're so fragile.
And I don't care. Like, I don't think the books should be in circulation, but I wasn't picketing libraries because they're there. Like,
no.
If I had seen it, maybe I would have taken it and dropped it in the toilet at the library. But I don't go to libraries because I don't know where they are. I just buy all my books on Amazon and then return them after I'm done reading them.
The library.
Why? Where do you library? His cartoon supported Roosevelt's handling of the war, and he frequently went after Congress, particularly the Republican Party, the press, and anyone who criticized Roosevelt, and anything he thought led to dissension and infighting, which he believed was inadvertently helping the Nazis. So, like, he swings rapidly back and forth between, like, based and monster.
Yeah.
Multitudes, an onion, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Multitudes, onion, clocks.
Nothing we say makes any sense.
Oh my God. Like we're another sousing out right now. I'm totally sousing out for clocks.
Oh my God. I'm such a sous for clocks. I'm such a sous for onions.
I'm such a sous for like a dry, stringy hair. Don't make any comments.
I'm such a
YouTube,
sous.
Leave me alone.
Don't you dare.
If you're listening to this on Spotify, don't look up on YouTube. So it is a little bit funny that he supported Roosevelt because when he was a child, he was scheduled to be honored as one of the top sellers of war bonds among the Boy Scouts, along with nine others. The president was supposed to give the Scouts a special thanks, but he only had nine medals to present, and there was 10 of them. So President Roosevelt shouted, "What's this boy doing here?" When Seuss, who was 10th in line, came to the front. He was mortified and like dragged off the stage and developed a lifelong fear of crowds and people in general.
That's so sad.
Imagine the president being like, "Ew, what the fuck is even that?
Get it away from me." And then they did. Nobody corrected him. They just did. No. Nobody was like, he's supposed to be here. He's supposed to have an award.
They just let it. Ew, an orphan. So funny. It wouldn't be funny if he hadn't turned out to be a terrible person, but I actually believe in reverse karma.
You had bad vibes as a kid.
Yeah. Your terrible vibes as an adult were like sent back in time, and people could like,
yeah,
and people could sense them. So they treated you appropriately.
Ew, who's this tiny racist? Get it away from me.
I like to imagine it was like the shepherd's crook.
Oh yeah, because he was on a stage.
From old school cartoons.
Yeah.
Because there was always somebody with like a crook.
I guess.
A crook? Is that
stagecraft? Hook?
Is it called Shepherd's crook.
Shepherd's cane? I don't know. If you know what they're called, leave a comment.
It's a crook.
It's a crook.
What the fuck? Why did I know that? Okay.
Why did you know that?
I don't know the name of Dartmouth University, but I know every tool.
But you know what Bo Peep's candy cane is called?
So in 1943, he becomes a captain in the army and commanded the animation department.
Why is there an animation department? I swear to God, these clowns are joking around with my fucking tax dollars. Why is there an animation department?
Oh, fucking dead. Okay, hold on.
You gotta be kidding me. I don't get healthcare. Like,
when you hire someone's grandson, you don't have a job for them. So it's like photocopy, ink refiller. You just need to keep them out of everyone's hair.
So I did one contract on a ship, and in our emergency drills, like with the, because we were all assigned like different life rafts, one of the officers was like, and if someone is freaking out, we've got like a fishing rod in here. We don't need the fish, but if you tell them to fish, because we can drink the blood of the fish for hydration or whatever, it'll give someone who's freaking out something to do. But they were like, if we're out on the sea long enough that we're running out of like food, then we're already dead.
Oh, that's so comforting.
Yeah. But they were like, you can make someone fish to calm them down. You can give them a bullshit fake job.
So he became a captain in the army and commanded the animation department of the first motion picture unit.
So much. Are you fucking kidding me?
Of the United States Army Air Force.
Oh my God.
The sentence sent me spiraling. Commander of the animation department of the first motion picture unit of the United States Army Air Forces.
This is why they call it the chair force.
Yeah. He also wrote movies. That's what he was doing there.
Like propaganda films?
Yeah.
Okay.
God, after the war, and his wife moved to San Diego and he went back to kids' books. In 1953, he wrote the musical fantasy film The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T.
The what?
It's so terrifying. The way I was like, like I'm even just trying to picture 5,000 fingers on one hand. It's moving your camera.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's going to be so annoying to cut. Stay the fuck still.
I'm sorry.
Turn that setting off. So the 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T failed horribly, as you might expect.
Who wanted to see 5,000 fingers on a single doctor?
No, that's too many. That's simply too many. It's the same reason my friends and I would have killed him with hammers. The same way when you see a centipede, you crush it because it's too many legs.
It's too many legs. What is he doing with all those fingers?
Nothing good.
What are they doing with all those legs?
Nothing good.
Nothing
climbing
good.
On your face when you sleep. That's what he's doing. He actually walks with his fingers upside down.
Amazing.
Oh no, they just line his body like a centipede. This is such a delicious podcast.
That's like the worst thing I've heard since the teeth slide.
Yeah. He never made a movie again.
Good.
So
good.
I love that.
We don't want him.
Good. Good.
Good. You stay the fuck out of this industry.
You stay the fuck away from my imagination. The shit you put in there. A report published in May 1954 concluded that children were not learning to read because their books were boring. The education division
so at, true.
I know, right?
So true, bestie.
The education division, headed by William Ellsworth Spalding, compiled a list of 348 words he thought were crucial for first graders to understand. He told Seuss to write a book using only 250 words, which is like a fun little challenge. Like, that actually sounds dope. Like, just like a little, like, I'm doing an October writing challenge thing. Yeah. That sounds fun. Spalding said he wanted Seuss to make a book that kids would love again. And 9 months later, Seuss finished a book using 236 of the words he was given.
Oh, so he came in under the challenge. That's cool.
Yeah.
And it took him 9 months, like a baby. He gave birth to it.
Although it retained the drawing style, verse rhythms, and all the imaginative power of his earlier works, it could be read by beginning readers because of its simplified vocabulary. It was called The Cat in the Hat.
Oh, there's that freak.
Where?
He's coming to your house.
You hear like cop banging on the front door.
Anytime it's a rainy day, you have to bolt the door.
That's so terrifying. There's got to be like a scary version. Oh yeah, the one with Mike Myers is pretty terrifying, actually, though. Let me think about it. Is he dead?
No, he's still alive.
Well, we'll see you soon.
You can have that one. He's Canadian.
Yeah.
What things you've given us.
You'll take your Bieber and you'll like it. Jordan Peterson.
You did give us Celine Dion. So,
yeah,
I mean, that had to make up for some of it.
Or like how my boyfriend would say, putain.
Putain. I don't know.
Sorry to my boyfriend. I don't think he actually sounds like that. That's just like me making fun of French people.
I only like fancy poutines, though. I don't like classic poutine. Like, I like a good red wine reduction.
I only like poutines that like aren't
poutine.
Like, they don't taste like they're from Quebec. So, Cat in the Hat, children's book, annoying, easily understood rhymes, success. So he kept it going. All of his books after that were like, what are some easy to understand words that children need to learn? And that's why they made it. It's because teachers were like, okay, this is actually perfect for my fucking classroom. Libraries were stocking them. They used to care that whether or not kids could read. They don't anymore. No. But that used to be like a really big thing. They cannot read. They cannot spell. They cannot think. It's legitimately fucking scary. We need like a non-racist Dr. Seuss to come and save them. In 1955, Dartmouth awarded him with an honorary doctorate of humane letters.
Oh, fuck off.
I know.
That's cheating. That's cheating. You don't just get to draw some doodles and have a doctorate. Who peer-reviewed your thesis? Who peer-reviewed that doodle?
Somebody looked at those racist little doodles and they were like, seems like something a doctor would write. So this is the note attached to it. Creator and fancier of fanciful beasts, your affinity for flying elephants and man-eating mosquitoes makes us rejoice you are not around to be director of admissions on Mr. Noah's Ark. These people are fucking disgusting.
So nerdy.
I know.
Can I also say, just for the record, I am so like impressed with the restraint that you showed not doing a rhyming intro. Because if you had done that, I would have flown to Canada and I would have fucking throttled you.
I added two rhymes, but they were not Dr. Seuss rhymes. And they were not noticeable unless you go back and listen to it. I was very intentionally subtle. Because I actually fucking hate poetry that relies entirely on consistent rhyming.
Little rhyming couplets.
There's no like,
yeah.
It's, yeah. Oh, so they made a term for that now. I'm so glad they're catching up. I'll write that down. I'll update my Wikipedia page on things I hate about poetry. Your affinity for flying elephants and man-eating mosquitoes makes us rejoice you were not around to be director of admissions on Mr. Noah's Ark. But our rejoicing in your career is far more positive. As author and artist, you single-handedly have stood as St. George between a generation of exhausted parents and the demon dragon of unexhausted children on a rainy day. I know.
It's there so was whimsical.
Fucking makes me sick. There was an inimitable wriggle in your work long before you became a producer of motion pictures and animated cartoons. And as always, with the best of humor, behind the fun, there has been intelligence, kindness, and a feel for humankind. Mm. An Academy Award winner and holder of the Legion of Merit for war film work, you have stood these many years in the academic shadow of your learned friend, Dr. Seuss. And because we are sure the time has come when the good doctor would want you to walk by his side as a full equal, and because your college delights to acknowledge the distinction of a loyal son, Dartmouth confers on you her Doctorate of Humane Letters. He joked that he would now have to sign his name as Dr. Seuss.
Okay, that is funny. Dr. Seuss.
Which I would have if I was
him. Yeah, hilarious. What does humane letters mean?
I have no fucking idea. I guess you're in the humanities?
Yeah, like, something in the humanities. We don't know what because you didn't earn this doctorate.
Yeah, because you've done literally nothing for this.
Another L for the Academy Awards.
So Dr. Seuss, kind of a dad joke.
Yeah.
Well, dad minus the children, which he did not want, except for his fake ones. He was once quoted as saying, "You have them, I'll entertain them," which is like a weird thing to say. We've already talked about the imaginary child named Chrysanthemum Pearl he shared with his wife. And while others boasted about their children, Seuss would instead discuss the adventures of his invented offspring. And there was always like, oh yeah, she can do this, she can do that. He would sit at dinner parties and just lie to people's face.
It must suck so much to be a child, to be the child of someone who has an imaginary kid that they're proud of.
Well, he had no real children.
Oh, I thought I thought you were saying he had a real child as well as the imaginary children.
No, only his fake ass children. But it would have actually been okay. That's hilarious.
I was like
sitting at the dinner table, and he's gabbing and boasting about Chrysanthemum, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Meanwhile, Eddie's sitting right there, just like muttering to himself.
Trying to like get his thousand fingers to pick up his fork. Chrysanthemum even appeared on their Christmas cards, and he dedicated the 500 hats of Bartholomew Cubbins to her, mentioning her age as 89 months going on 90.
Okay.
At one point, Seuss had six neighborhood children pose with him and Helen for their annual Christmas card. As Norval, Wally, Wickersham, Miggles, Boo Boo, Thnud, and Chrysanthemum, of course.
Right.
When he was getting the award, when they were offering him the doctorate, he had to put it off for a bit, though, as his wife was ill. She had, in fact, been ill for a long time, struggling quite a lot, during which Seuss was reportedly having an affair while his wife was homesick. In October 1967, Helen died by suicide.
Oh,
and 8 months later, he was remarried to Audrey Dimond.
Yeah, fuck this guy.
Now, the internet is very mad at him for this. This is what they bring up. They're like, Dr. Seuss was the worst person in the world. He cheated on his wife, who was sick. I'm like, well, all the like racism and internment camp stuff, like really sort of hit me a little bit harder.
Yeah. But this is a shitty thing to do and a thing that like is depressingly common, like men having their wives get really sick and either like cheating on them or divorcing them while their wives are really sick.
Yeah. Which is a horrible thing to do to someone. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should have to stay with someone because they're ill.
No.
But leaving them home alone with no one to care for them.
To go have an affair is... It's rude and then to come to home say and the lie. Least.
Yeah. Not okay. Okay, this is a little rude, but it was I guffawed when I saw it. I was looking up some of the reasons why people hated him during the beginning of my research. And one of the first comments on the Reddit thread was, he really said one bitch, two bitch, dead bitch, new bitch. And that I'm sorry, but like gagged.
Yeah.
Poor woman.
A better writer than Dr. Seuss.
Literally. So, okay. I had to get that out of the way because I couldn't read that after what I'm about to read, which is incredibly fucking depressing. So she had struggled with her health throughout their entire 40-year marriage, and for more than a decade leading up to her death, she was partially paralyzed. At the time she died, she was also dealing with cancer. So paralyzed, has cancer, husband not around, and she knew about the affair. And according to everyone, it left her despondent and... People say, like, he killed his wife. Not actually, but his actions led to her death. And I don't ever really agree with saying somebody caused somebody else to die by suicide.
Suicide is always, like, there's always multiple factors going on. But I could see how if you are already going through... such unimaginable. Yeah, that would be the thing that would break you.
Being alone during that is fucking terrifying.
Horrible.
That would be, I think, the most awful part of it. Mm-hmm. That's the most awful part of dealing with anything is if you are alone and the person that you love doesn't even
has
give
abandoned
a fuck.
You. Like, it's like, the abandonment. It'd be one thing if he was having an affair, but that entire time he was also like very attentive to his wife.
Yeah. You know, like I'm going out to the store to get your silly medication and then sucking a dick or whatever. Like, fine, whatever.
I'm moving my sweet little hot mistress into the spare room. Sorry, but we just want to make sure that we're always near you.
Let's take a little ad break. And then when we come back, we'll have some space from... that joke to this next horrible thing.
Okay.
In Helen's suicide note, she wrote, "Dear Ted, what has happened to us? I don't know. I feel myself in a spiral going down, down, down into a black hole from which there is no escape, no brightness. And loud in my ears from every side, I hear failure, failure, failure. I love you so much. I am too old and enmeshed in everything you do and are that I cannot conceive of life without you. My going will leave quite a rumor, but you can say I was overworked and overwrought. Your reputation with your friends and fans will not be harmed. Sometimes think of the fun we had all through the years."
Supported him from the start. I know. She supported him from the start. She encouraged
to the
him
end.
To become the man he became. And then when he betrayed her and abandoned her in her hour of need, she was still thinking about his reputation and his feelings.
This is the second time I cried doing the research, like reading that. And like, I could see myself saying something like that. Like, because what are you trying to do? You're trying to, if you really love someone, you're not trying to go out spitefully. You're not trying to like, the reason why
she was removing herself
was because she loved him.
That's so
like, she did it for her and she did it for him.
For him.
Like, ugh. Like, obviously, she had fucking cancer and she was paralyzed. Like, she, there was a lot of things that
there's other things going on. Yeah.
But like,
and maybe there, to an extent, she knew she was going to die anyway and she wanted to go out on her own terms, which I totally think is fine. But this was clearly not like that. The illness is only one part of the equation here. A major part of it is him, because that's who she's thinking about.
Yeah. Which is just like, it's hard. It's legitimately fucking heartbreaking.
That's awful.
So everyone that knew her was, their summation was basically what we got from the letter, which was she was more scared of living without him than living in pain. Like, she would have been willing to suffer if she had been able to suffer with him there.
But that was her last hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And back then, he would have been shunned for that infidelity.
Did he indicate any kind of remorse?
Not that I've ever seen. He was very happy with his new wife. Yeah. I wanted him to die really quickly after that because I fucking hate him so much. So his achievements at that point, his achievements like after that were not very many. Like, he wasn't really writing. He wasn't.
Yeah.
He put out his work. He got his accolades. He had his money. And on September 24th, 1991, Seuss passed away of cancer at the age of 87. At his home in San Diego, and his ashes were scattered in the Pacific Ocean. His new wife oversaw his estate until her death on December 19th, 2018, at the age of 97. So I think she was maybe a little racist too, and that's why it took them till 2021 to do anything with it, because new people had to take over.
Yeah.
Or maybe she's just like, I don't.
We have to keep the Africans in grass skirts. I love those.
Like, I'm sorry, but like, they're really cool. Like, I have paintings of them all up on the house. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
4 years after his death, the University of California, San Diego's University Library Building, was renamed Geisel Library in honor of Geisel and Audrey for their generous contributions to the library and their dedication to improving literacy.
What about his first wife's dedication to improving literacy?
Nothing.
Feels like she dedicated the one that more got of her him. Life to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's dead.
I hope it hurt.
I really fucking do too.
I really hope the cancer hurt.
I know
hurt.
That he wasn't alone, but I really wish. I'm like, it's so petty. But like, this is why I had to go back in time and tell Roosevelt to yell at him on stage. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, this little bitch, it's good. He doesn't have it coming in the future. He doesn't get what he deserves. And I fucking hate it when people are like, he'll get what he deserves in the end. And they're like, not unless we work hard.
We've been doing this podcast way too long. These monsters always live forever and they die very comfortable.
It's because the worst people are always rich.
That's like, so true.
I'm sorry. But like, I mean, I'm not sorry, but I know it's a little overgeneralizing, but a lot of the time it's true. Like,
when you're a bad person and you're poor, you either end up in jail or dead. Like, you get your shit rocked
real fast. Yeah, nobody tells your story.
Yeah.
So yeah, sorry for ruining your night, but there's Dr. Seuss.
Fuck him. Fuck him and his ugly naked ladies.
This is why I also didn't give like a cutesy little fucking rhyme at the beginning. There were two, Girl and Pearl and Moose and Seuss, but they were all two lines apart. It's like two guys in a hot tub. You're 5 feet apart, so you're not gay. Like, yeah. you need to. There's
opposite
no
ends.
I want every rhyme at opposite ends of this right now.
Opposite ends of the pool, right the fuck now.
So, anyways, yeah, I'm Kaylin Conrad. You can find me on YouTube at Kaylin Conrad and on Twitter at Kaylin Conrad.
I'm Hoots. You can find me on Twitter at Punished Hoots, and you can find me on YouTube at Hoots YouTube.
And we have a Patreon that would be like so hot if you were to join, where you can do things like, so every week after an episode like this, we sit down and we debrief a little. Sometimes it's sad. Sometimes we're just letting off steam, but we just have a little after dark conversation, which we call the autopsy. And those are available in the morgue only for our patrons. And at a certain tier, you can also add a suggestion to our suggestion cemetery if you really want us to cover someone. It has to be like someone famous, though. You can't be like,
my aunt.
My uncle?
We both went for our parents' sibling.
My aunt is such a fucking see you next Tuesday. And I'd really like you to take her down a peg.
She just died. Here's her obituary.
Oh, yeah, she was an obituary. Oh, that's so much better than the morgue.
Damn it.
Welcome to our obituary. Okay, you know what?
Okay, every year from
now
on
in January, January is now obituary.
Love it.
And we'll have a year to plan whatever
that
means.
We'll have a party. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.